Well, what do you make?
What do I make? I do make cupcakes. Yeah, but not here.
That's not what this is about.
Yeah. Wait a second. What are you interviewing me for?
This is actually a bakery down here.
Yeah, I heard that this was.
Yes, this is
hasty pastry. I mean, like, cupcakes are not out of the question.
Hasty pastry. Yeah. It is hasty pastry, or it's a little bit hasty pastry. Is the term more than being about hasty? Being about pastry that's hasty. But yeah, I do make pastries, but certainly not in here. And what I make, I probably wouldn't actually consider myself a maker. I mean, I would never define myself as a maker. Not that I define myself as much of anything in general, but I do make plenty of things, and I think that's probably just sort of as part of my nature, of the type of person I am. I do like to build things, and I do like to take things apart to a certain degree. But actually saying that that's what I am is it's a bit difficult. Yeah, it's certainly not what I do by trade, and I don't fill my time with it.
I'm actually curious about, like, what is the last really fun thing you made?
The last fun thing I made, maybe it's not completely, way off the map, but was a scarf.
Really?
It's this long scarf, and I, my wife actually had a knitting book, and my wife started knitting for something, and I kind of watched, and basically, you're lying in bed at night, and usually it would be like we'd read, and then she started knitting, and I'm lying next to this person, and they're kind of, their hands are going away and stuff, and I'm like, and she's like, I can't figure this out. I'm like, oh, well, that's, I don't know, let me look. And anyways, I started to just try out knitting, and so she had this book, and it was called, like, Stitch and Bitch, or Bitch and Stitch, something like that, and it had a scarf with a hidden alien pattern in it. And so you look at the scarf in a certain direction, and there's this green alien head. And I thought, well, I like it. I like the idea, because you look at it one way, and it just looks like a stripy scarf. And then, you look at it a different way, and you get this sort of hidden message in it. Except for I didn't like the alien head. I didn't like the green. And so I said, okay, well, here's the technique. They kind of went over a little bit the technique on how to get this hidden pattern out. And I did it with this red skull on a black background, and it's like this long scarf, and it's actually really itchy, and so I don't wear it too much, but it's really cool. And people look and they go, you made that? I'm like, yeah, dude, check it, it's a scarf. And I no, it's not just a scarf. And I kind of hold it out to them, and they look like, what is that, a skull? I'm like, yeah, check it out. So that's probably the coolest thing that I made. Electronically, I'm always sort of playing a little bit with hardware. Work-wise, I do, systems administration, so I kind of like to, it's sort of, part work, part fun. It's one of the sort of nice things about the job is I get to, I put my hands into things, and you do it a little bit at work, and then, I come home or I come here, and, I do it a bit more, because when you do it at work, it's sort of, you're within the constraints of work's fairly well defined in what you have, and you can't exactly really screw around, or you got certain standards you have to have. And so being able to sort of do it your way, whatever that is, is nice. And so I get to do it here too.
Sweet. We start off with introductions. Can you just say, like, who you are, what your name is, and where we're at?
Okay. My name is Jonathan Delgado. I also go by Golgo13 as my handle from a very long time back, back into the 80s. So, been using it a while. Any other Golgo 13 out there that's not actually in the manga or in the anime, they're just posers. Yeah, they're pretending. That's me. And I've been, had the handle for a while, and I've been involved in various aspects of hacker community, hacker spaces, and stuff. Basically, ever, you know, as long as I've been using that handle, that's sort of my, yeah, my spatial identity is things. So I am Golgo in all the references to things, typically. Yeah.
And we are at.
And we're at Hasty Pastry, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, secret otherwise. And yeah, don't tell. And I am one of the founders, yeah, one of the original members of the space. I was also original member of Loft in Boston, back before it was loft.com and At Stake and all those other things as well. So this is my second space. Yeah, it's sort of like, sometimes I like to think of it as sort of Loft V3, you know, Rev 3 or so. I was like in Rev 1, I kind of missed or skipped out on Rev 2, and yeah, and now this is like Hasty Pastry, yeah, third branch, yeah.
So obviously you have a strong desire to create spaces like this, and you're mm-hmm. really drawn to them. I'm here to explain why, or is it related to your attitude that you were mentioning earlier of you always like to make things, or...
What the space provides to me is, well, part of the motivation is to actually have a space that is, it's nice to have a workspace, and it's nice to have a place where you can do stuff which, you know, I mean, you could do it at home, you know, I got a house, I have a basement, you know, or I've always had, you know, you have your little study or a computer room or something, so there's always a place where you can do stuff, but it's nice to not be so isolated. It's nice to be able to kind of do things with others, be involved with others. I mean, maybe you're getting input or help, maybe you have some shared things that you can, you know, use together, but yeah, just to be involved and you know, kind of socially active with other people who are, you know, who you have this common bond with is ends up proving to be the bigger thing. You know, and it's you know, you're here, you can do some stuff, but personally for me, it's like club space. Yeah. You know, you're not always doing stuff as a club, but it's nice to be able to kind of, you know, you're hanging out and being with this group of people who you have various, you know, things in common with. And it's not, it's a fairly select, you know, in our case here, I mean, we're not an open space, we're not open to the public. We've got a handful of members, and it's, you know, we're pretty select, you know, it's a selective process. There's not really any process to it, but it's, you know, it's a select group of people, and they're all people who you know and you have trust and respect for, and you can be open with in the things that you're doing. Whether it's a project here or just ideas in general.
So I'm actually, you were there in the first instance of Loft.
Right.
Were you there at the very beginning?
Yes, yeah. I was, one of the original people when we, excuse me, I was one of the original people when we actually, established the physical space. It started out as, I mean, the way it initially started was there was sort of this, you know, core of people. It was myself, it was Count Zero, and Brian Oblivion, and we all lived in the same neighborhood. We lived within like four blocks of each other in the south end of Boston. And Zero and Oblivion, they're both married, married. And their wives were friends, and they actually wanted to do this little business on the side, this little fashion-y business, and they were actually making things. They were making little pins, like little flowery pins and stuff like that, that they were then selling to boutiques in the Boston area on the South End. And so they wanted to have, they were doing it in their kitchens, their dining room tables, and getting hot glue all over the place, and it was a mess. And so they wanted some space to be able to do their stuff, make their things, and but it was sort of a sideline, it was a little bit of a hobby. They're making some money from it, But not enough to really for them to afford their own sort of workspace, their own commercial workspace to do things. So they said to their husbands, they said, well, how about, there's this, they'd actually found a location, and they said, there's this location, and maybe, like, you guys could do computery stuff on the other side. I mean, it may not have been specifically their idea. Maybe, one of the husbands said, well, if you guys can't do it completely, either way, it came out that we would split the space in half. And I came onto it. I mean, my wife wasn't involved in any of that sort of thing. I came onto it, and one other person, White Knight, came in with it. And so the four of us initially took over one half of this. It was an industrial kind of loft area, and there was like there was one guy who was doing like woodworking, and there were some graphic arts people and other areas of the building. And but we had this one sort of studio space, and there was a long curtain that went down the side of it, cut it in half, and they had their little crafty stuff on one side, and we set up our desks with computers. We had this sort of big closet area where we stuck like old trashed like deck manuals and various things that had been basically piling up in all of our apartments. And we set up space there, and that was it initially. Eventually, the pin business, didn't really go anywhere. They kind of wrapped that up, and we took over the whole thing, and the group expanded, and eventually it turned into what people then started to know as the loft, and everything that the loft turned into, from there. I actually stopped taking part, I don't remember what year, but a few years into it, just actually strictly out of financial reasons, I dropped out. I was still sort of community-wise still part of it, but and as far as what turned into loft.com, and then eventually the whole sort of hackers business security research type thing, that was sort of post Golgo 13 era. I'm like the fifth Beatle or something like that.
I think actually something that's really interesting is kind of the origins coming from this mixed bag of people, and then it filtering out to what became Loft. And I think that is almost analogous to the spaces right now, in the way they're studying.
Right.
I'm wondering, well, first of all, I don't know, have you ever visited any other hackerspaces?
No, actually, it's strange, to have been... Actually, well, let me think. No, to have been part of, Loft and now Hasty Pastry, and I've known, I know people who, in other towns have, kind of either modeled, have started hackerspaces and modeled them on the sort of Loft, Hasty Pastry model. But I've not actually, visited them. I'm sort of the person, I kind of stay in the area, and when I do travel, it's usually not to other people's hackerspaces. So you've seen a lot more than I have. better or worse,
Do you see, so we heard about the origins of Loft, but mm-hmm. Do you see some sort of lineage that comes before Loft that kind of led towards this place existing? Like, what is Loft's parents? Who are Loft's parents?
I couldn't really say what the parents are for Loft, because basically Loft originated, it derived from the bulletin board scene. We had... there was one BBS which was sort of common to all of the members. It was ATDT in Boston, and it was a closed, sort of semi-private underground BBS. I mean, I ran a BBS as well, and that's where we sort of originated from. And I don't think we didn't necessarily draw any inspiration from other groups. To us at the time, it seemed like it was new, and I don't, you know. I mean, maybe there was something else that had gone on, that some ancestral memory that was lingering in the back of our mind that was inspiring us, but we were doing it pretty much independently, or at least we felt like it, I think.
Did you know most of the other guys from ADDT?
I knew everyone that, you know, we started the space with, yeah, we knew, and by nature, yeah, because of how we sort of came to know each other, we're not an open, yeah, this was, I mean, this, sometimes it sounds a little corny, but yeah, this was, we considered ourselves to be elite, and you can do that with, spell that with, yeah, a 3 and a 1, and a couple more 3s and a 7. Yeah, we were elite, and we developed that through, we were online and boards, and we'd meet each other. Yeah, we kind of met in various events, like 2600 meetings and grillathons and things like that. But, we developed trust in one another. So that was, we were already established as a group and had confidence in each other and knew each other fairly well, you know, as well as you can know, you know, almost anybody within, you know, without being like, you know, friends for, you know, 10 years or something like that. So we were already established, and so it was fairly easy to, it was certainly easy to get started for things. And you didn't have to worry about, you know, I've been in situations where, okay, you know, you have roommates, and yeah, you're in college, and you got like a big apartment or a house or something, and there's like 6 of you in the space. And a lot of it's like, well, okay, we got this house. We need to find like 5 other people. How are we going to find, you know, 5 other people that we can share this house with? And like, well, you know, I got a friend, and you know, I work at the record store, and I can put something up on the wall at the record store or in the cafeteria or whatever. And eventually, you know, you get various strangers who come in together, and you formed a house. And there's a certain amount of, yeah, you start out with a certain amount of tension or maybe distrust, or, you know, you're all together in a space, but you're not necessarily a community. And sometimes you, with your roommates, you form a community. Sometimes you kind of get a little bit of a sense of, some people are a bit more of the outsider or the sort of, yeah, visitor. Maybe, yeah, 3 of the people are close, and then you have others who aren't. With the loft and with here, yeah, I think when people come in, they're all people that we know already. So people come over, and yeah, you know, we have people who are kind of, will sometimes use the space for this or that, and that's fine, but they're not members of the space. Everyone who is a member of the space is somebody who you're familiar with, and we already have an accepted sort of comfort level, yeah, with them.
That's two different, completely different models that we've been seeing. Some places, for instance, in California, there's noise bridges. Like, their initial instinct is to trust everybody, and they give keys to everybody.
Right.
And it's a very open space. And then there are places like here and in New York, other places where they are selective. And I don't know if you can say either one is doing something better. It really is dependent on the group of people. And that's one of the key features we find in spaces, that each of them has their own culture and traditions.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of like the Unix operating system model of hackerspaces. Yeah, initially Unix operating system was very, yeah, original systems, that all very open. Everyone kind of had the same, yeah, root privileges to things, and yeah, you could equally trash the system or improve it, and yeah, how well it works out depends on who's involved. You know, and yeah, maybe there's, for some, if spaces, I guess if you start out on a very open model, I could see how, if everyone's accepting of the open model and sort of embraces all the peculiarities of it, it can work, and that's if that's the premise that things are founded on, then you know everything's a success, I'm sure, you know, no matter what happens. We're definitely not on the open model, but which isn't to say that it works out perfectly anyways, because ultimately, yeah, people are people, and yeah, personalities change, or you know, aspects of personalities reveal themselves later on, and so I'm not sure. The closed model certainly has the advantage of, yeah, when you can start with a group and you can find a space and you maybe have some certain preconceived ideas about what you're going to do with the space, I think that certainly helps. I mean, as far as Hasty Pastry goes, I think we kind of, because it is sort of the, it's almost, another attempt at Loft, or it's another sort of version of what was done with Loft. When we started this, we could look at it and say, okay, well, what do we want the space for? And how does that compare to what we did or we saw happen with Loft? And so we're able to kind of say right off the bat, well, this isn't a commercial space. You know, we might do some things here which end up being for individuals, you know, commercially related, you know, maybe whether it's like, yeah, we're using this place to do our own work, like work, sort of outside of work, you know, we're kind of using it as like it's not my office, it's my second office, or are you doing something which maybe will on its own become commercially viable? It's, yeah, not the goal of the space to become something more. Yeah, the goal of the space is really to sort of support the individuals and do what they like to do. Whereas with Loft, yeah, it sort of started with maybe some unwritten goals or, yeah, unvoiced goals, and it actually, yeah, evolved over time in what its purpose was from being like, say, a hacker space, you know, sort of a club space, hangout space, work environment, to becoming something which was, you know, goal of becoming a commercial entity. Yeah, something successful as an actual, you know, business, whether, you know, in that case it was computer security, or, you know, you could easily say, you know, if you had a hacker space, which is more like, say, a maker type space, to become, yeah, commercially viable in terms of products, yeah, some sort of, you know, product that you can then deliver to other people in the, you know, in the maker community.
So I want to get back to why you think you needed to have a reiteration of the Loft concept. But before we get to that, I think you're bringing up the BBS scene,
mm-hmm.
and ADDT and
ATDT.
Oh, ATDT.
Yeah.
What is it? What is an acronym for?
ATDT. ATDT is, I'm not sure if it actually stands for anything. It's when you had your modem and you were going to actually dial a number, you would say ATDT and then telephone number, and that would actually, AT is like attention, DT is probably something like dial tone, and it would cause your modem to dial up a number. So ATDT is just a BBS command. I mean, a modem command. Just like ATH0 is hang up.
Cool. ATH0?
ATH0, yeah.
Sweet.
Well, Hayes command set, I think. Yeah.
Well, I'm actually kind of curious about ATDT and how it... pretty much when you mentioned it, I don't think a lot of the viewers will know what BBS is or what ATDT does. So maybe if you can go through
that. ATDT was a... Oh, okay. So BBS, a bulletin board system.
Yeah.
In the 617 area code. So that's Eastern Massachusetts at the time, back when 617 was fairly large. So it's the Boston, Metro Boston area. There were certainly people who probably dialed in from outside of Metro Boston, but, you know, this was, you know, we're talking late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, very early 90s, but mainly the late 80s. And so people were mainly dialing in regionally to connect to bulletin boards, and so it was an underground sort of hacker you know, hacker-centric, if you want to say, BBS system. Invite only, basically. You could apply, but you had to get approved by others. And that was it. I mean, there was a lot of us, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of people, you know, sort of in the, you know, sort of perhaps well-known, I don't know, maybe not well-known, in the hacker scene who are members of the bulletin board. So certainly all of the original Loft people were ATDT members. Lots of others in the hacker scene as well. Yeah, lots of CDC people and some other stuff. But it was regional. It wasn't, yeah, I mean, we're not even talking, you know, global. It was all, yeah, it was all people in the area. So once you were, yeah, in the 617 area code, yeah, yeah, 617, yeah, represent. But yeah, it was, yeah, you, I mean, that was already a filter. It was a, you know, there's the bulletin boards, yeah, the world of, yeah, people using bulletin boards, yeah, which is a lot narrower than the world, certainly, of internet users nowadays, because everyone's an internet user, a lot narrower than the world of, if you think of a, you know, an online forum now, which can have, maybe you have, you're narrowed down by focus, but geographically, you can be anywhere and anyone. So this was 617, so you basically were getting people on the East Coast, I mean, East Coast, Eastern Massachusetts, maybe some people who were doing a little bit of long distance dialing, or you would get some people from outside of the area, some people from outside of the area who had maybe some access to dial outs or something like that, so they were able to get free long distance BBS connections. But it was a very filtered subset in general. So although you maybe didn't like everyone on the board, and not everyone necessarily got along, and when you'd meet them, you'd go, oh, that person's a real tool or something like that. Generally, you had narrowed your focus down to people who had a common interest in hacker, computer underground sort of, you know, culture. This is sort of, yeah, pre or on the maybe beginning edge of, yeah, cyberpunkish type stuff, if you want. And you were then even further narrowed down because you wouldn't really be able to get on the board without some sort of a referral from somebody else who maybe you knew from another local bulletin board that you both happened to, yeah, frequent, but wasn't quite as elite as, yeah, perhaps ATDT was or something. So it was a good community. We had, we would have an annual Grillathon. Grillathon was a summertime event where everyone from the board would actually get together and you'd meet in person. And this was like a big deal because, yeah, suddenly their online persona was somebody you were having, like, yeah, a burnt hamburger with. And, yeah, we still do Grillathons now. I mean, there may have been a year where there was not a Grillathon. Or there may have been years where there were things that were like Grillathons, but they didn't call it a Grillathon as well. But yeah, some of the first one I remember was actually on top of somebody's roof in the Fenway, on top of the rooftop of their apartment building. And yeah, with the little hibachi going and the boombox and drinking sodas and eating burgers and, yeah, causing mayhem and stuff. I actually have a scar from my first Grillathon because, yeah, it's like right here because I collided. We decided to, yeah, go play some, yeah, like, yeah, tag football or something afterwards. And I don't think we'd been drinking, but yeah, we might have been drinking. And I ended up, you know, going to tackle this big guy, Death Vegetable, who is, he's big now, he was big then. And me and this other guy, we both sort of went after him at the same time and our heads went, yeah, clocked together like two coconuts or something. And so that was actually my first, yeah, introduction to meeting all the ATDT people in the flesh. And I was known for a while as the guy with the big biker boots who smashed his head with Nils when tackling Death Veggie and bleeding all over the place after the fact. Yeah. Which was actually helpful, yeah, because I sort of it's instant notoriety, perhaps for the wrong thing, but yeah, it kind of attaches a face, yeah, to the name, and which is handy.
Little bit of blood never hurt nobody.
Exactly.
Did Nils get a cut?
Yeah, Nils, he kind of split something on his scalp. It didn't bleed as much. Mine was right near my eye, and it was just, it was blood everywhere, and I couldn't get my motorcycle helmet back on after the fact, and because it all puffed out like Frankenstein, and it was nasty.
And Death Vegetable is part of the CDC.
Yes, yeah.
Care to explain how the CDC fits into the picture?
Excuse me, sorry. CDC is sort of, it's this weird sort of common thread that it's like the glue, which, yeah, or it's like, it's a fabric that is kind of laying behind everything, and it doesn't directly, you know, relate to things, but I mean, right now in Hasty Pastry, we have two CDC members, I think. I think we have two members. I hope I'm not missing anyone. Count Zero and Freakout, who are, yeah, CDC members. Loft, we also had, yeah, White Knight, who is in CDC. Mudge, who is sort of, I'll think of Mudge as being sort of Revision 2, Loft, yeah, sort of Loft, the second half of the story, CDC. So CDC is sort of a background theme. Yeah, you're making a movie, so it's almost like, yeah, it's the Alfred Hitchcock who always kind of appears, yeah, in each film, sort of in the back of the scene. It's sort of there, and you kind of, yeah, I don't know. If CDC stopped to exist, I would always, yeah, be expecting it to still, yeah, run into something from it. I don't think it can stop existing. It will sort of always be. And it's just, it's just a weird sort of common thread, secret tattoo that somehow pops up. It's like the Rosicrucians or something like that, maybe.
Cool. I guess that kind of brings us to the idea or the concept of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can kind of describe the culture that was, I'm kind of interested in the culture that you think is breeding hackerspaces today.
I think what's, you know, breeding hackerspaces today. Well, just like hackerspaces earlier on were maybe, I think, more computer oriented. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd get a computer and there'd maybe be this like well-defined sense of things you can do with your computer, very limited, or, you know, ways that you should use the computer. And, you know, and sort of hackers at the time, you know, were basically pushing that. That was sort of, yeah, maybe you're breaking systems or whatever, or you're creating new systems. There's a sort of the goal or the idea to be able to do more or something novel or different with what you have. And, you know, makerspaces now, I think, you know, you have a lot of, you know, I mean, the world is so full of sort of very manufactured things and very, you know, well manufactured, maybe cheaply manufactured, but, you know, they all sort of do maybe what you want for the most part, and they're fairly well defined. And, you know, and there's basically, I think, a desire maybe to, you know, you have something, a physical item, and you want it to be better. You don't want it to be the generic thing that there's millions of out there, yeah, that just kind of rolled off of the assembly line, and you want to sort of put your own stamp on it. And I think that's what, yeah, what motivates, you. I mean, that's what motivates me to, you know, to knit my own scarf. I mean, I don't even like scarves. I mean, I hate scarves, really. Yeah, and this one's like scratchy, but I'll wear it because, it's something that I did, and it is, I'm not going to run into anyone. Actually, I did put the plans online a little bit at one point, so maybe I will run into somebody. If I run into somebody with it, I'll know exactly how, they got it like that, like down to the pixel, basically. Or maybe I'll say that's like the modification of what I did, which was a modification of something else. But in general, it's mine, and it's got, it's got my, my character. I'm able to put my character into it, and I'm able to sort of, make something which, like it or not, I can say, that's sort of me, that's the thing I did. And, maybe sometimes the things you make are, it's just like, it's just the little project, and you kind of go, oh yeah, I did that, and it sort of sits somewhere, whether it like, tangibly is real something that you sort of, twisted together somehow, whether you twisted it with code, or you twisted it with a lump of tinfoil, or with circuits, and you kind of do it, and it kind of sits somewhere there, and it's a little memento of something that is you, that you've done, or maybe it's an actual big, project, and so I think that's what, I mean, today we just, there's, I think, well, not just today, I mean, there's always, I think, a need, for some people, a lot of people at least, to be able to sort of individualize and sort of put their own, character into something. But, also, to be able to do it with other people sort of as inspiration, or just to be able to say, hey, we're doing this. And it's great that we can, not just do things in isolation. I think sometimes, you see these things of, like some artist down in like Mississippi, in some backwater of Mississippi or something. And he's like discovered one day because some, New York art gallery guy is like lost on some back road, muddy road. And he finds some guy who's been like carving and painting these like, great like folk art pieces. And all of a sudden they're everywhere. But that person is working in isolation. And I mean, that's, it's a great thing if you can. Some people need the isolation, or some people just do things automatically when they are isolated. But it's nice to be able to not have to be isolated, and to be able to kind of interact with others and support others as they're trying to do the same thing.
Do you see this kind of stamp of originality being part of the culture that started the old hackerspaces, the early version, or is this a new trend that's happening with these spaces?
Well, I think anytime when you're a hacker, you're hacking something. You are trying to, I mean that is the putting. You're putting yourself, you're inserting yourself into the object, whatever that object is. And, and you are, marking it as your own. And you're saying, like, this is what I've done. And I think no matter what that object is, it's the same, it's the same motivating force that you, going on, whether it's somebody who says, like, hackers are people who write code and make code for the better, in the better world, and they're, making their modifications to, software hackers, or whether they're maybe, bad hackers and, breaking into things and defacing things, or whether they're hardware hackers and, it's still the same, I think it's the same underlying, motivation. I'm not sure what like caveman hacker did. The wheel and fire maybe, and other things like that.
So I'd like, I think it's really interesting that you called it marking, because it's a lot like the graffiti artist's tagging.
Mm-hmm. And that's almost like hacking the decoration, visually hacking your environment. I mean if you want to think of graffiti artist is that.
If you care to rephrase that, because I think it's an interesting analogy.
I don't.
Do you see them as similar?
I love graffiti art. I love graffiti. in general. Yeah, if you want to call it art, yeah, that's great. And some people, yeah, I mean, whatever it is, however it works, I like, because when I see it, I see, especially when it's like, I mean, I like the stuff that's art and is on the side of a building where you can say that somebody said, hey, we will let a graffiti artist, yeah, decorate the side of our building. I see that and I go, well, that's great, because visually, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, but sometimes you just see where somebody's like bombed a site or something like that. And that actually gives me a little something extra, because it's something that's there that, you know, wasn't there before and certainly wasn't designed to be there. And, you know, in the best examples, it makes whatever it is like amazing or, yeah, beautiful, or certainly, yeah, sort of catches your attention. And yeah, I mean, in a certain sense, that is, yeah, that is like hacking, I would say. I mean, I wouldn't, it's not something I've, yeah, thought about a lot connection-wise in the past, but it's certainly sort of up there. I don't know how, yeah, there's some definitions. Yeah, some people would say it's the same as, yeah, it's like the malicious hackers. Yeah, those people have, yeah, yeah, breaking into computers, it's just as bad. It's probably the same type of crime to some. Some people, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people, well, there's certainly groups of people out there when a computer crime is maybe committed and you hear about some, maybe not like some lame, like, you know, virus or something like that, but like, yeah, when somebody, yeah, breaks into a government sites and tries to find like UFO data. Okay, let's say that. I mean, that is, yeah. I mean, I applaud that. Yeah, I mean, when I see that, that's like, you know, yeah, the guy who, maybe not the guy who put like his name and, yeah, in 20-foot letters, but yeah, the person who, yeah, did some great, yeah, mural, some, yeah, illegal on the side of railroad tracks or something like that. You know, it's, yeah, they're almost equivalent. Yeah, I mean, I don't know the motivations for each one. I don't know what they are, but you know, a certain amount of the, I mean, some stuff's obviously illegal. Sometimes things are, yeah, more illegal than others. I don't know. Yeah, how you balance that and, yeah, kind of weigh it is difficult, but. Yeah, I think sometimes the emotion that, yeah, that elicits in you, kind of knowing it's been done, are very similar.
And it's a moral judgment, I guess, people have to make. But right. Also, if you, yeah, look at the text files that accompany many of the cracks and many of the things that people associate with hackers, mm-hmm, they are like ASCII tags.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. These big ASCII tags that people post up on the internet and post it up and they like, they do something to a site. Or,
right, and you got your shout outs to, like, you know, your, all your, yeah, your shout outs to your crew and, you know, all the people who you're dissing and, yeah, you don't, yeah, no thumbs down for, yeah, various other people. It's, yeah, it's all tying back to the same, yeah, sort of core element, perhaps.
Yeah, and the handles related to tags.
Yeah, yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I don't think any of them could be as ridiculous as some of the bulletin board, some of the handles that people have come up with from, yeah, bulletin boards, like, yeah, certainly better than things like, yeah, Skizzy the Donut Crusher or something like that, yeah.
That would take way too long to write.
Right, well, it is Skizzy, yeah, but, yeah, so, yeah.
I think that's something that I haven't really thought about very often before. This is the very first time that I'm thinking about it right, mm-hmm, now, but I definitely can see some relationships, and I would like to ask around. I wish I could do this again and ask this question, like, hey, do you see a relationship between, like, graffiti and, like, the hackerspace movement? Or what about these, like, nerdcore rappers, right?
Right.
Like, there has to be some sort of commonality between them, and I think it has something to do with that whole outsider outlook that,
right,
hackers have, mm-hmm, maybe along a side of the graffiti artists, where maybe they were nerds, or maybe they were minorities, or maybe there were these people that were like outsiders, and now's their time to, like, this is my world, you know what, it's my Play-Doh, I'm gonna make it my own, and I'll show people what I can do, and
right,
I'll tag it to let them know that this was this whatever person, and I can't use my own name, even though mm-hmm. perhaps they would like to, but
right.
I can't use my own name because I'm not in an environment that supports the activity that I would like to do.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, that's, I mean, that's quite reasonable. I mean, yeah, when I think of myself as a teenager, I mean, there were two things that I did as a teenager. Yeah, I was one of probably five kids in my high school who did like programming. Yeah, like they're all like the really geeky kids. And I was sort of the geeky kid, but I think then at one point I was also the geeky turned punk kid. So yeah, I was like in the 80s, it was all about like, yeah, Boston hardcore and stuff like that. Yeah. And so as a teen, I was like, it was punk, hardcore stuff and computers. And yeah, and all of it is, yeah. And yeah, and there's probably some graffiti involved at some point too, a very long time ago. So I doubt there's any remnants anywhere of it. But yeah, it all sort of ties in. A lot of it's sort of destructive. Yeah, it's it's hard to, yeah, it's certainly a long way from knitting a scarf. There's all, it's a little, you're fighting, it's rebelling against something or trying to change something that you don't like, a reaction to, or a counter reaction to something in the system, one way or another, perhaps. Certainly it's about, your sense of individuality, how much of it is really you being an individual or just feeling like you are an individual? Doesn't really matter, but.
Cool. do you want to change tape? Is there any questions that you have to ask?
No, I think we've pretty much hit most of the things.
You look so young with a beard. Is there anything that you'd like to say? We can switch tapes and roll again.
I don't. I mean, I really came to this just to sort of. Part of it, I just wanted to be here when, the space was sort of shot to make sure that,
no one's breaking things.
No.
They're not snipping the dust off.
Yeah, no, not, well, not quite so bad as that. I just, I mean, some of it is, there is maybe some, probably some initial regret over, having dropped out of the loft stuff when I did, so I just kind of want to make sure, I wasn't always, not always being there when other things happening and sort of wanting to kind of, make sure that, it's not, getting a full portrayal and kind of, getting a sense of things, but I'm really glad
that you were able to talk to us at all, because just having some of the history, like uh-huh. all these places is like baby-faced, like,
uh-huh.
very fresh and new, and I think they need. I'm glad we got to talk earlier with Jason, because he definitely retailed some of the pitfalls that Loft had in terms of like trying to mix financials.
Sure.
Social and like.
Yeah, and it's probably better to hear those things from him than people who are directly than people who are directly involved, because it's harder when you have people personalities, directly in things, but. It's funny, the only other time I've been, I'm not sure if I was any of the stuff that Torquay did, I don't think so, for the Loft. The only other time that I've actually ended up on tape for something was in a Subgenius video that was done
those
like...
crazy videos with all the
along,
psychedelic colors.
And yeah, I think it was nuts because...
I wish we could talk about Subgenius for a bit.
Oh, no. It's one of those one of those strange things from sort of high school and college. I've had my dirty little fingers over all sorts of things.
And Subgenius definitely has something to do with the graffiti stuff.
I have my book of stencils and stuff somewhere still. So,
cool.
I was on it.